All right, here we are, February 11th, already Super Bowl in the books. That means spring is right around the corner. And it also means there's nothing to do for about the next month or so. Oh, well, we do have the Olympics. Anyway, we're going to cover, we're going to see if the SAVE Act will save the elections forever.
Got the Daytona 500.
The Daytona 500, it cometh.
Yep.
We've got the Guthrie kidnapping, some news, but not good news yet. And the Big Bad Bunny, did his thing. Brought to you, of course, commonsenseohio.com or commonsenseohioshow.com, brought to you by Harper Plus Accounting. Our accountant could be yours. Let's jump right into it. So this day in history, February 11th, 1979, the Iron Lady, Margaret Thatcher.
Right.
And, you know, the parallels are eerie here. You know, it's like, remember when Reagan gets elected, right on the heels of the horrible Carter era, where inflation was out of control. If you wanted a mortgage, you had to wait in line. I was a young lad, so I wasn't waiting in line for more. But I do remember my dad talking about it and people talking about it a lot. There were lines for gasoline.
Yeah.
Life was horrible. America sucked. People were protesting in the streets about how awful America was, carrying signs. And then we beat the Russians in 1980 in the Winter Olympics. And that sort of changed everything. Reagan gets elected. And he did get a little criticism early on because of the recession and inflation, but quickly got that under control. Thatcher, same thing, sort of lived a parallel existence.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the thing about Thatcher is she would have made a tremendous American president. And I secretly hope that after Reagan left office, that when she was finished as PM in the United Kingdom, man, it would have been awesome if she became a U.S. citizen and ran for president. But of course, she couldn't have. She wasn't born here. But
yeah.
At any rate, she was fabulous.
Individual freedom, individual liberty. Yeah. Like I think we were talking about the buses off the air. I didn't know this.
And she was a middle class girl. Her dad ran a grocery store, and she literally was part of the merchant class. Not the wealthy class of the, you know, they project the Tories or anybody conservative. Oh, they must have been mega millionaires. I mean, in no way was she. She was kind of a blue collar, you know, street urchin. You know, worked for her dad. Yeah,
tough lady.
And knew the meaning of a British pound.
And like you said, privatized industry, like the buses. She took the double decker, the famous double decker,
yep,
decker red buses, and privatized them.
Yep.
And sort of famously saying, why should the government run that business?
Exactly. And like Reagan took on the air traffic controllers early on in his administration, she took on the coal miners and basically said, you know, you're going to end this strike. You're not going to put the British people in a position where they can't afford energy to heat their homes in the wintertime. And so she broke that union.
Look, it makes no difference to me that she was a woman. I could care less. But the people who want women in those roles, they hardly ever talk about Margaret Thatcher.
Right.
Even though she does have the
right
genitalia that would qualify her as a lady.
Right.
But that's apparently not good enough. Anyway.
Yeah.
Mark, there is one more thing we should talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
I know what you're getting at.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm anxious.
There's another one. We are right here in Columbus, Ohio, folks. That is the home in Westerville, of course, Ohio. Not only did we have Molly Hatchet and the. Anti-drinking folks. I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, the home of Buster Douglas.
The anti-temperance.
The temperance movement. Yeah. But it also the home of Buster Douglas. I used to work out at a place called the Fitness Trend, which was like a weird little place off 270 and Route 3 or Westerville Road.
Right.
And I would go work out there. And in the back, you would see this darkened area where there was a boxing ring. And that apparently is where James Buster Douglas used to train.
Wow. Cool.
And I may have even seen him there a time or two. But anyway, on this date in 1990, after getting knocked down in the eighth round in Tokyo, knocks out Mike Tyson in the 10th.
Wow.
Don King, of course, claimed it was a long count. That didn't get it many. That didn't go anywhere. And for a short period of time anyway, James Buster Douglas of the Fitness Trend in Westerville, Ohio, was the champion. If you could understand how big of an upset that was, maybe even we were talking about the Russians in 1980 and the U.S. hockey team defeating the Russians. It's along those lines.
Yeah. Oh, big time. Yeah. I live in Lincoln County, and Buster moved out there, and his ranch where he lived for a time had boxing gloves. You know how people throw boots over the top of a beam above the entrance, the gate to the ranch? He had boxing gloves hanging. I used to see him at the post office. I'd say, "Hi, champ." And he was the nicest guy.
His really
son,
nice guy.
His sons were nice. And, yeah, they'd roll up in a Rolls Royce or a Suburban or something, but they were completely nice people.
Yeah, down to earth people.
Super.
One of the production people here at the Studios 511 did a commercial with him. I mean, really, really good dude. So anyway,
yeah.
Columbus makes it big yet again. And then Norm, you're going to launch something, I think, that we should carry on for a little while.
Yeah. So, you know, this is the 200th anniversary of the, you know, the establishment of the United States of America, if you count it from
250th.
Yeah. The 250th, if you count it from, 1776, which many of us do. The Declaration of Independence being, you know, on July the 4th. So at any rate, 250 years ago today, the royal governor of the Georgia colony was ousted by the Sons of Liberty militia in Georgia. And his name was James Wright. And his big crime, the reason, but not just because of the revolution, but he was particularly unloved because he helped author the Stamp Act, which was pretty much, along with a few other of King George's transgressions, was probably the main thing, taxation without representation, that really ticked off the one-third of Americans who backed the revolution. And interestingly enough, James Wright was the only governor of the 13 colonies, the only royal British governor to reclaim. After he got kicked out of his mansion in Savannah, he went back to England, got the British Navy and a bunch of Marines, went back to America, landed, and took back his colony. He was the only one. At the end of the war, he held Georgia, but otherwise the British were completely kicked out.
Interesting. And this is the year 1776. There's a book, David McCullough.
Great book.
And it reads almost like a novel.
Yeah.
So if you have any, look, you don't have to get it a book on tape, do whatever. But I read this, 10 years ago or maybe even longer now, but I just looked it up. It came out in 2005. I didn't realize that. But phenomenal book and sort of outlines the history of what was going on in the revolution and the Revolutionary War.
Yes.
I learned quite a bit about it. It sort of piqued my curiosity and I did a dive in different things, but really fascinating stuff. And
all his books are awesome.
Great books.
Yeah.
And he did a great job of sort of making that readable and understandable for everybody. So anyway, we launch into the main section of our show. Lots to talk about. Where do you want to start, Norm?
Well, I think it's almost inevitable. There's some sort of strike, I think, is inevitable against Iran by the Trump War Department. It just came across the news yesterday or the day before that they sent a fleet that was Desert Storm in size of C-17 troop carrying airplanes. Now, whether they were empty and it's a feint or whether they're full of airborne troops, I don't know.
Look, Trump has...
That's a bunch of people.
In this presidency particularly, he's sort of made a name for himself saying, look, I'm going to tell you once, maybe twice, but after that...
He drew a red line.
And find out.
Yeah.
And he's drawn a line, and he already let one line pass about the killing of the protesters and such. So,
well, I think that's in play.
It may be back in play.
I don't think you can say something like that and have credibility unless you act on it.
He's certainly not the type to do it. Now, look, we may disagree on whether he should do anything with Iran.
Yeah.
But
the Renoman negotiating supposedly with the Iranians, the mullahs in particular, of course, they run Iran. But the mullahs have said that the two things that want to be negotiated by the United States are not on the table. And one is their nuclear program, you know, and the other is free elections. And they just say those are non-starters. It's not going to happen. So that being the case, I don't know what they're negotiating about, the shape of the table or.
Yeah.
To me, I think Trump is stalling in order to send another carrier group into the region. So we have the Abraham Lincoln there and all of its support ships, something like 20 ships. I'm sure a bunch of subs and, you know, all the B-1, B-2, all the aircraft we have. And he's talking about sending a second carrier group into the region. And I think when you do that, I mean, it's kind of like how we amassed forces around Venezuela, it's a prelude to action, I think. So yeah. I think something's going to happen. It's interesting that everybody condemned the Venezuelan, the people that were critical of it, as a regime change move. But, of course, he didn't do that. So Maduro's number two is in charge of Venezuela to this day. And it basically was to smack him down, get him to quit selling oil to China and Cuba.
Yeah.
And obviously quit importing drugs or the precursors to the U.S. So I don't know if we're really going to do regime change in Iran as much as hit the mullahs hard and then let the people basically conduct a counter-revolution.
Well, he seems to be walking this line where, you know, he's got, and this is somewhat of a split in the conservative movement, right?
Yes.
So you've got,
yes.
Do we want regime change? Do we want to go right. all in like the Bush
yeah.
era?
The neocons. And he's
right.
clearly not a neocon.
He is not. I don't know what he, in fact, I think he's more of an attack dog. Here's a problem, Mr. Trump, go fix it. And he does. And yeah. it's sort of allied with the conservatives on some levels, but not others.
No. And you know, it's not really a conservative thing to stick your nose into other countries' businesses. I mean, you know, it's kind of a conservative thing to be an American firster and to stay home. And there was a lot of that leading up to World War II, in fact.
Yeah.
You know?
No, indeed. Yeah. I mean, look, in between World War I and World War II, we were like Fortress America. We don't want to, we're not sending
right.
boys over
Very
there.
Isolationist.
And, you know, why should we go over there and solve those problems?
Right. Right.
After we lost all the doughboys back in World War I.
Big time.
But anyway, history tends to repeat itself.
You know, the other big thing that's really cooking nationally is this SAVE Act. And we've talked, Ohio has voter ID, but many states do not have voter ID. And so for purposes of federal ballots, federal elections, the Republicans, the conservative Republicans at least, are pushing what's called the SAVE Act. And it's basically a voter ID that would be nationally imposed, of course, just for federal election purposes. You know, the states have the right to run their own elections. That's right in the Constitution.
Yeah, this is going to be it'd be some interesting legal issues as this plays out. So,
yeah.
Look, there's two separate things going on. One, we can agree or disagree, if you will, on whether there should be voter ID. I mean, I tend to agree that there should be.
Yeah,
I think, or proof of citizenship or whatever. Why? Because we don't want those who shouldn't vote to vote.
Yeah.
And we don't want those who have voted once to vote twice. And we want to make sure that the people who are casting the vote is the person who's casting the vote. You know,
right.
I mean, these are pretty fundamental things. And I should also say that there was a push with the Dems when they had control of the reins, of course, to sort of nationalize the election process and make sure they had it consistent. So I go back and forth. So that's the one question. The other issue is we do have this pesky constitution in the way that says voting is for the states to decide how they're going to do it and to what authority or what authority does the federal government have to sort of push down a regulatory scheme like voter ID. What drives me bananas about this stuff always as an attorney is you see the headlines, Supreme Court to mandate voter ID. They're going to do no such thing. There's going to be a law. It's going to be passed or not passed. Somebody's going to claim that the law is either constitutional or unconstitutional, and the Supreme Court will have to decide that.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court itself is not mandating anything of the sort, and it has done so in a few select cases over
It's
the
upheld
years.
The voter ID by states.
Yes.
Like it up, it
but
upheld.
That's upholding a
that's
law.
That's upholding
it's not
a.
It's mandating.
That's
anything.
Right. It's upholding right. a state law, and they've upheld voter ID
means
almost
state,
every time.
So it means the state could change their law.
That's right.
Back. They're not
that's
saying
right.
it has to be this way.
That's right.
This was one of the problems that I had, for instance. Conceptually with the Roe v. Wade decision. It's like you can't mandate out of the Supreme Court. It's not a legislative branch.
Yes.
It shouldn't cram down this kind of stuff.
Right.
There's either in making up trimesters and doing all this stuff. That's why there was so much criticism over that decision.
Right.
And you can make the same about there's lots of sort of controversial decisions in the Supreme Court history, Miranda being one of them.
Yeah.
Where they just sort of say, this is what you have to do.
Sure.
Eh.
Yeah.
It's
like abracadabra lines and you know say yeah. this and it
and this is not to say that it's not good policy. It's not to say it's bad. I don't mean to take that, but
yeah.
constitutionally the Supreme Court should not have that authority.
Yeah.
It's the legislative branch. Now we of course have delegated all legislative duties to unknown administrative agencies who tend to just write rules after rules, and we're going to get to one about the EPA here shortly, but
right.
we will see what the Supreme Court does with this. I think the decision will be less about whether voter ID is a pro or a con, and more about whether the federal government has the right to require the states to do it.
Well, it appears, though, that the SAVE Act is in pretty big jeopardy of even passing anyway.
It's gotten through the House, right?
It's at the Senate. There's two versions floating around. The House is going to, pass. It's already passed one version that's in the Senate, and the Senate has their version, and it's inconsistent, so they're going to have to resolve the differences. But the polling on this is dramatic. The Gallup organization, which is no conservative, pollster, 95% of GOP voters want voter ID. Surprisingly enough, the same poll showed 71% of Democrat registered voters also want voter ID.
Because it makes perfect sense.
Because, hey, you can't call it racism. I mean, if you have to have real ID on your driver's license in order to fly or to get a beer, you can't be telling black folks and Mexican folks that they're incompetent somehow to have an ID. That's ridiculous. They're just as smart, just as sophisticated as anybody of any other skin color. So the racialization of this debate is ridiculous.
Well, I mean, the real question is, unlike alcohol, unlike driving, unlike some of these other things, are flying on a plane.
Yeah.
The constitutional, I take both sides of the argument. I always take both sides of the argument. The constitutional argument has to be that an ID puts an undue burden on your right to vote. I do not agree that it's an undue burden, particularly if the government supplies an ID for everybody. I mean, it's more like it's akin to registering to vote. I think that's how it ultimately get looked at.
Yeah.
But, a lot of people don't realize that Paul Newman was tied to Ohio.
Oh, yeah, right.
Had salad dressing, Newman's Own.
From Cleveland, and where did he go? Kenyon?
Kenyon College, I think so.
I think so.
So Ohio likes salad. How do you like your dressing? Because Kamala Harris sure likes it. Here's what she has to say. See what I did there?
Yeah, I like it.
So Kamala Harris had to say about voter ID, of course people have to prove who they are, but not in a way that makes it impossible to prove who they are. If you can figure that one out, leave us a comment. but she is back to her old tricks. I think she's actually making a run again. She's going to take on the lizard man, Gavin Newsom, I guess.
Well, this whole thing is about election integrity, right? And one of the other things that's happening, just real quick, that is surprising to a lot of people, the demographic people that look at what states are red and blue and all that stuff, is there's been this dramatic exodus from places like California to places like Texas and Arizona and Nevada and Florida. People have left blue states and gone to red states. But and so the thinking was in this midterms and what's going to happen in the federal election 2 years from now with the presidency is, people are saying, well, the Republicans or the conservatives should pick up more House seats because those populations are now bigger in these red states. But what has happened, because you count for the purpose of House seats, you count people, you count raw population, you don't count citizens. So what has happened is with Biden letting in, and nobody has a hard number, somewhere between 12 million and 20 million, they say. I know that's a ridiculous range, but nobody has a hard number. But when those folks go and get a driver's license and then get the franchise to vote or show an electric bill or something, and they don't have to demonstrate citizenship, even if they don't vote, just their very just being counted means that instead of California losing congressional seats, it may keep congressional seats that it has now,
and this,
because illegal people are living there.
This is why
that's crazy.
This is why Trump was pushing back, and a lot of conservative Republicans are pushing back on the latest census
and
who they were counting and how they were counting, because it's significant. And if you happen to be a conspiracy theorist, and they're out there, you might answer the rhetorical question or the otherwise rhetorical question: why let so many people in the country and put them in various places? Well, you might be able to get more House representative seats that way.
Well, let's call it a strategy. You can call it a conspiracy, and I don't mean Steve is, but I mean, people will knock down something that's outrageous sometimes, but it it is a strategy. You know, whether people got together and made it a conspiracy or, I mean, that's all, you know, that's just, you know, words. But I think that there's something to this. Why else would you have unfettered illegal, like basically we had no border there for 4 years, unless you were trying to pack the country.
Like, what's the purpose of it?
Exactly. Right?
Other than just being sympathetic for a bunch of people coming across
the border. Yeah, it can't just be empathy.
We should say one more thing about voter ID and the other, because I think it's fair to take on all the argument. The other argument I've heard against voter ID has to do with mail-in ballots. Of course, mail-in ballots, almost everybody before COVID would recognize that that is the most fraught type of voting as far as fraud goes. And that was sort of universally understood. But now, at any rate, there is an argument. I heard Kamala make this argument, too, about rural people or poor people not being able to photocopy their ID and send it in with their mail-in ballot as an impediment to voting. I'm sure, I am hopeful, I would think that there is a workaround for that. And I also find it sort of reprehensible to think that just because you don't have a lot of money and just because you live in rural America, you're not able to duplicate your ID either with a phone picture or a photo or a photocopy or something.
Right.
She's like, I heard her talk like not everybody can get to Kinko's or Office Max to make a copy. It's such nonsense. Anyway, those are the arguments though. You got a constitutional right. And the more you throw on top of the exercise that constitutional right, at some point it would tip the scale and become a constitutional violation. The courts will have to decide whether having an ID and how it's implemented is an obstacle that's a bridge too far to vote.
You're saying Kamala Harris making a run again? She just activated her presidential run Twitter account the other day.
Oh, she's back.
It's not labeled as that, but you know, obviously it's a. I think she might be trying to
get. Oh, I think there's no question. She's back in the ring. So Gavin Newsom goes over, and he was over at the Spectre conference, I think.
Yeah.
Talking about getting knee pads, all this nonsense for Trump. And I don't think it worked.
It did not.
So I think his numbers have sort of decreased. So Kamala sees a little seam, and she's going to slip right in. So I'm looking forward to it because I love hearing her talk. I think it's one of the most entertaining things that we have in our pop culture.
Yeah, and it'll be an amazing battle between her and Josh Shapiro, the famously turned down because he was Jewish, governor of Pennsylvania. Well,
hold on, she never admitted that, but
the tapes have come out. Like he in his new book, Shapiro has evidence that that's why he got turned down.
So we're gonna have Kamala, Shapiro, Gavin.
What a mess!
Probably Buttigieg will be up there on the stage.
Yeah. Right.
And what's his name down in Texas might even dust it off.
I know who you mean. The guy who's Irish with the fake Mexican name.
It should be an interesting stage. And then it brings up another interesting question. Who's going to be on the other ticket? Is it going to be we're going to have
Marco or Vance
or both or some version of both. So yeah. We shall see.
We shall see.
I don't think there was evidence that she didn't pick tap him up because he was Jewish. There was the Pete Buttigieg thing where she came out and said the reason she didn't pick him was because he was gay.
The underpinning of all this
came out with that. Like, she was honest about that.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy, just put on recording.
As if they can be as sexist, racist, homophobic, whatever terms they would use against the other side, they can do it as much as they want because they get a pass on all this nonsense.
Yeah, I guess what Shapiro's book says, apparently, Troy, which I have not read his book, but I've seen him interviewed about it, is that the questions he was asked by the DNC screener for Kamala was all about his connections to Israel. Like they were all over that. And he's like,
and think of the
there aren't any.
And think of what was going on at the time, right? I mean, we had the war was still going on, right. And there was this genocide arguments every single day in the news. People protesting and shutting down Harvard University. I mean, just lunacy at the time.
Well,
and it wouldn't have been a good face picking somebody Jewish. Why? Because he's Jewish. Is that okay?
Well, and Kamala famously is the, she's the identity politics. She is the person that Biden picked because he said, I have to pick a black and I have to pick a woman for my vice president. And so she fit this stereotype that Biden set up. And it's really funny that she would basically do the same kind of, a demographic selection of who she picked, which ended up being Tim Walz, who was a nightmare.
I mean, that guy. that guy.
Pick a fat white guy from Minnesota that lied about his military record and clearly has a $9 to $12 billion Somali fraud operation going on in his state.
What a goof.
Great pick.
What a goof.
Great pick.
So anyway, SAVE Act, we shall see.
We'll see. Yeah, so the U.S. EPA thing that Steve has referenced a couple of times, Lee Zeldin, who's the administrator of the EPA in the Trump administration, he did an advance notice of rulemaking several months ago that the EPA intended to take away the finding that there is a deleterious greenhouse problem with the environment. And that, of course, I mean, done decades ago, that finding was used to do things like alter the tailpipe requirements on cars and bring in EVs and
the deleted truck debate returns.
The deaf blue sheep urine that you have to dump in your pickup truck if it's a diesel, the cafe corporate average fuel economy standards that all the car makers had to meet, et cetera. The list is very long of all of the greenhouse related regulations. And if you take away the pretext, then those regulations are basically based on nothing.
Yeah. This is one of these things that is my pet peeve, because and I don't care if it's Trump, I don't care if it's Obama, I don't care if it's a Bush, I don't care if it's Kamala, whoever gets elected, it doesn't make any difference to me. When Obama pulls out his pen and said, if I can't do it with Congress, I'll do it with my pen and my phone. And then everybody after that has driven a truck through it, Trump included. We have these administrative agencies who promulgate rules based on, say, Obama's conclusion. And I say Obama because the administrative branch of government that I've not been able to find yet in the Constitution.
Right.
I've looked a couple times. I still can't find it. Sits under the auspice of the president. And so when I say Obama, I mean Obama did this and said it's an emergency and these things are inherently dangerous and these cars and autos have to be regulated. So immediately what happens is, and I think this is where most people don't quite understand why prices go up, because immediately what happens is that the auto manufacturers now have this extra weight on top of their manufacturing process where they've got to research and develop things like DEF,
sure,
diesel exhaust fluid,
right,
which is basically cow piss.
Right. If they sell a sports car, you have to pay a gas guzzler tax if you buy a Corvette.
And this happened, I've said on another show, another podcast, this was 2008. It happened in 2009. So then from 2009, you might have some of the preemie trucks that made it in 2009. But after 2009, all of your diesel trucks.
Right. And that's just one thing.
That's just one thing.
That's one thing.
So the economists, whether they're right or wrong, are predicting like a price drop of about $2,400, $2,500 per vehicle. Now, that's an average.
Right.
So, of course, your little Honda Accord may not go down as much as the bigger trucks. But on average, it's going to take a huge yoke off the industry.
Right.
And they'll be able to provide. Now, I think the other side is certainly going to say, well, we're going to ruin the environment and we're going to have floodwaters and life is going to end as we know it. Last I looked, that hasn't happened. And right. I don't think the DEF is, I don't think it's because of DEF. I think it's,
well, let me give a good example besides DEF of Steve mentioned how this drives prices. So if you talk to people that operate fleets of trucks, you know, whatever company you want to pick, Roadway or, you know, Yellow Freight, they're gone now, but maybe they're gone over this, but what would happen is, you know, these people go out and buy a Mack truck or a Fruhoff or some kind of, you know, big expensive truck, a Volvo or whatever, over the road semi tractor, right? Mm-hmm. They pay a fortune for these, you know, like $500,000.
Yeah, really expensive.
Very expensive. And under our consumer laws, you only have to support a used vehicle. If you're a manufacturer like GM, Ford, Chrysler, Mack Trucks, whoever, you only have to support that vehicle for so many years after it's sold. And then you're free of any obligation. There are parts related to these emissions that the literally you can't start the Caterpillar or, you know, the Detroit Diesel or whatever motor are in some of these old semi-tractors. The motors are fine, but the computer-assisted systems that are operated by feedback from all these pollution controls will not allow that motor to run.
Yeah.
And if when these trucks get so old, and by old I mean 10 years old, yeah, when they get and they're still worth
$250,000,
they got to retire these fleets because they literally cannot get the parts to maintain these trucks.
And put that in perspective. So look at this. American farmers were fixing diesel engines.
That's right.
From the day
diesel another engines, good example.
I mean, yes, pulling out their welders and right, just fixing stuff
with duct tape and wire.
And absolutely, diesel engines run forever. I mean, they're going to break and there's right, parts, but yeah, when maintained, they run forever. And that's right, why, you know, the diesel semi truck without all the crap on it will run forever.
Millions of miles.
So scale that up. What you're really getting at is because of this, because of the cost of the trucks, because of the cost of the debt, because of the cost of the
premature retirement of these
Amazon
vehicles,
price goes up. Why? Yes. Because the yeah, trucks have to deliver it.
Right.
The price of eggs go up. Why? Because the trucks have to deliver it.
Yeah.
And you could say, well, it can't be that much. Well, it is, and it can't be that much. And this, look,
yeah,
the environmentalists would say, well, it's worth it not to ruin our earth. Fair enough, but at least acknowledge how much it's costing. And then we can have a real debate about it.
Yeah, and basically, for me, the tell that undermines this as real, the scaremongering behind the environmental crisis, the whole Chicken Little thing, Al Gore, you know, kicked off and, you know, going back in time, you know, the people that got carried away and really have brainwashed a lot of American citizens, you know, starting in grade school, is undermined by this. I mean, nothing could be clearer to me that these people don't believe their own BS than Kamala Harris just this year buying, I think, a $20 million property on the oceanfront and the Obamas before her. And these are the leading, you know, Chicken Littles who say, well, the coastal areas abutting the oceans are going to rise several feet, 10, 12, 20 feet, and everything's going to be underwater in Hawaii. And yet they go out and buy these coastal properties. So clearly they don't believe their own bullshit.
Yeah. Or they don't care.
Or they want to live underwater.
They want to live underwater.
So.
Or they bought a lot of insurance. Who knows? But either way.
I think, Steve, if I can, just a quick news item, and we'll watch this. But this is fascinating to me. So just yesterday, the FAA shut down the international airport in El Paso. Now, that's hard on the Mexican border. I mean, literally across the highway from El Paso is a gigantic urban area of Mexico. And the interstate highway there basically bisects America from Mexico. Like, you go down that highway on the right side, if you're heading to California, on the right side is the United States, and then on the left side is Mexico. They shut down that airport for 10 days.
And what was the stated purpose? Security reasons, they
security
said?
Hey, I don't know what's going on here, but man, when you shut down an international airport,
I hope it's a good reason, because that's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on. Did they hear that there's you know, anti-aircraft missiles that the cartels bought, and they're going to, you know, stake out the El Paso air. I don't know what's going on, but I mean, J.D. Vance, when he talked to us several years ago when he was running for Senate, and we asked him about, hey, do you want to start a war with, you know, the cartels? He said, I'd like to start a war with Mexico. So I don't know, like, I don't know if something's, you know, Trump has threatened to go militarily after the cartels. He has said that.
Well, and that's not without history too. That's been, I mean,
that's,
look,
there are right,
books written about it, novels right, written about it, movie. What was that? Clear and Present Danger.
I mean, George Patton chased Pancho Villa, you know, yeah, all over northern Mexico. We have crossed into Mexico many times.
Yeah.
So anyhow, you want to talk about Ohio, some Ohio news?
Let's kick around some Ohio news.
Yeah, so Franklin County, which is the county that surrounds Columbus, Ohio, And the U.S. Marshals Southern District, which is based in Cincinnati, Ohio, combined last week to do something they called Operation Clean House. And just in Columbus alone, so we're one city, you know, out of thousands, just in Columbus as a demonstration, they arrested 50, a nice round number, right? 50 felons who had falsified their Section 8 or otherwise their HUD, Housing and Urban Development subsidies, in order, you know, their entitlement to those programs, and arrested them. So people are talking about ICE sweeps and DHS sweeps. I guess now we're looking at HUD sweeps.
Yeah.
And if there's that much fraud, bring it on, man.
You know, once you start, I often jokingly say up in my law practice that the government will find as much fraud as it wants to find.
That's right.
And it's because the government programs breed fraud. I mean,
yes.
Like you can't.
Yeah.
And think of all the different levels the fraud can happen. If you have one governmental program that's going to dole out money to somebody, to humans.
Yes.
The humans getting the money. Typically, it doesn't go directly to them. There's an intermediary or something. So,
they
like in this situation, you got landlords getting HUD money. So somewhere there's a grift, and it's not just the Somalis, folks. It's everybody.
Oh no,
because
it's everybody.
It's because it doesn't feel like real money when it's the government money. And then take it a level up. You got the people working for the government, and you know this is drives me bananas because you know people don't understand that when you overbill for or you overstate your overtime hours, that's fraud.
Yes.
Right. That's government. Right. That's fraud against the government. And I've seen police officers do it. I've seen government workers do it.
Yeah.
I had one government worker talk about working at home and watching Netflix. I mean, look, that's all fraud and it's all our money. So I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. You should want to stop this. And it doesn't mean that you're against the program that you're, that is the, the place of the fraud.
Yeah. Nobody's talking about getting rid of Section 8 for, you know,
but clean
impoverished
up.
Families.
But clean it up.
But clean it up.
Yeah.
So another couple of big things that are going on in Ohio that we should get into is there's a battle over big data citing. And Ohio has almost 200 data centers, and over 100 of them are in the central Ohio area. And it's driven up real estate taxes. It's driven up water prices, electrical rates, it's also a plague, if you will, on lifestyle. And there's concern also about the emissions, these cooling stacks where they give off a lot of water vapor. There are chemicals in the clouds that they put out. And if you take just Johnstown, Ohio, as an example, the data centers are they're southwest of Johnstown, and of course the prevailing winds come from the west, and people are concerned about the siting of these and spreading them out, and it's not just a NIMBY thing. So there's a big battle going on at the state house over some competing legislation, and it's not really clear that it's partisan. It's, you know, a lot of rural areas are very red, and yet there's a lot of rural areas that want to preserve their rural characteristics. I know Steve and I both live in rural areas. And, you know, when you tell people that these farms are going to be converted into neighborhoods and data centers, there's a lot of pushback.
There's a lot of pushback. And, you know, it would be easy to say, look, this is good for everybody. Going to bring more business into our community. It's going to increase our revenue, generally speaking, across the board, where all our land values are going up. But there's another side of that coin. Because the land values go up, so do taxes.
Yes.
And so you get folks who have lived on their house, maybe even owned their house, or lived on their land and owned their house for the last 30 years.
Yes.
They can't afford it anymore because the taxes have gone up. They're on fixed income now. They can't afford it because now real estate taxes have doubled. And they're like, well, I need to sell. And people are like, well, who cares? Because you've made, you're going to triple your value. You're going to get whatever, but then they have to go somewhere else. They don't have anywhere to go.
They burn up if they sell their little 5-acre plot, some of these little old ladies end up in a nursing home then.
Yeah. You know? They've carved out their place in the world. They paid for it. They lived the American dream.
Right.
And now they can't afford it. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying it's bad, but that's what's going on behind the scenes of some of these places.
And the other real big story that's going on is we have this system in Ohio which is fantastic. I mean, I could just imagine Thomas Sowell and Milton Friedman. They loved the idea of school choice. And basically give people back some sort of voucher or some sort of ticket, you know, that they can spend at any school of their choice, public, private, charter, homeschooling, whatever. And Ohio has something called Ed Choice. And roughly 300 school districts are going to the Supreme Court, and they're going to contest that it's unconstitutional under Ohio's law, which Ohio's constitution calls for the term of art is adequate public education. And it's been highly litigated what that word means in front of the Ohio Supreme Court. And so we'll see how this stacks up. But they're basically saying because those vouchers can be spent on private schools, meaning parochial, Jewish, Muslim, Protestant, you know, any kind, LifeWise, whatever, any kind of school that's an alternative to a public school, that's somehow unconstitutional.
Yeah.
So this is the inevitable battle. We saw this coming, and Ohio has a very conservative Supreme Court, but there are some mavericks on that court that may go the other way.
We shall see. It'd be interesting to watch. Historically, our Supreme Court doesn't really reach conclusions. they keep bringing up stuff and it keeps getting struck. So the school issue is a big one here in Ohio. We shall see how it shakes out.
So, Steve, I'd like you, if you would, to explain, because I stayed at a Holiday Inn and I have a degree from a law school, but I've never been a practitioner. So I'm very fuzzy on this, but this perpetrator, or I shouldn't say perp, because they released him, a person of interest, let's say, that in the Nancy Guthrie putatively kidnapping case is what they think it is. Hope they didn't dump her and she's been disposed of. But if she's still alive or if she was kidnapped initially, they had released some video. And then just hours after releasing the video of somebody on the front porch, the actual perp in a mask and gloves and everything, they detained, and that's the word the sheriff used and the FBI used, they detained a person of interest who has since been released. And I'd like, if Steve, if you don't mind, to explain the difference between arrest and detained, if there is a difference.
Sure. I'm just joking. Look, I dare I say you don't know, but you know when you see it. So generally speaking, this goes... The term detention or detain, we can probably trace that back even before a case called Terry versus Ohio, but Ohio makes it big again. It's a case called Terry versus Ohio that talks about a limited detention. Say you're walking down the street and the police officers see what they think is furtive behavior or something that would leave them reasonable articulable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot. Then they can go up and they can detain a suspect on the road and say, hey, look, just check in, see what's going on. Don't go anywhere. You're not really free to leave, but you're not quite under arrest either. So what makes it an arrest? I don't know. Handcuffs maybe, or you're really, really detained, or you're in the back of the cruiser, or you go to the police department. Extra stuff piled on top at some point becomes a full-blown arrest. What it really comes down to when you use the term detention versus arrest is what the police are required to articulate to support it. And the less of a detention, the less they have to articulate. So what they're really saying is we didn't really arrest the guy, but he wasn't really free to leave. And we just had some suspicion that maybe he was involved. So we're questioning him. And what's the practical difference from his perspective? Probably none. I'm working on a case right now in my law firm where, you know, somebody's brought down to the police department. He's stuck in an interview room and he's surrounded by cops and they start interviewing. I mean, is that guy arrested, detained, or something less?
And he hadn't been Mirandized yet.
And he hadn't been Mirandized. So that's the other big thing. Usually when you have something called, quote, custody, which is not necessarily, quote, detained, and certainly not something less than arrest, then the police have to read somebody their Miranda rights before questioning them. Doesn't mean the case gets thrown out, but it means that if the police question somebody who is in custody, then they can't use the statements or the admissions that they obtain as a result of the interrogation. So look, what is a detention? It's something less than an arrest. It means that this guy is probably just a suspect. It means they probably didn't have something called probable cause which is more than reasonable suspicion, to actually arrest the guy. And sometimes it's just weaselly words to sound better. I mean, look, if you can figure out detention, leave it in the comments. I've been doing it 31 years representing folks charged with crimes, and we always try to put definitions on it. And let me tell you what the definitions are. If you feel like you're not free to leave, then you're detained. If you feel like you're not free to leave, then you're arrested. But you maybe not really, really don't feel like you're free to leave or detained.
Wow.
It's a wishy-washy term. Courts dissect it, though, based on the type of freedom that's being restrained. So back to reality, if you're just on the side of the road answering questions but aren't quite free to leave until the police release you, that certainly feels different than being placed in cuffs and taken down to the police department. So that would be called a limited detention.
Okay. Like you've been pulled over because maybe your car matches something on the radio. So they pull over a white van because you're driving a white van.
Yep.
You're not free to put it in drive and just leave and say, hey, I don't want to talk to you. Goodbye.
Yeah.
So you've been detained, but you haven't been arrested.
You haven't been arrested. So it's something less than an arrest.
Interesting.
And, you know, if you follow Supreme Court precedent, there's a case called Delaware versus Prowse, I think 1980 or maybe 1984, 1980, I believe. Says a police stop motor vehicle is a significant intrusion under the Fourth Amendment that requires justification under the Fourth Amendment. Meaning if they're going to stop your car normally in the situation you just talked about, then there's got to be some reasonable and articulable suspicion that you're doing something wrong. Ordinarily, speeding or a traffic violation.
Okay.
Which even would be more than reasonable suspicion.
Okay.
But what about you got a kidnapper van, the white van, and it looks like there's something going on? Or a lot of times we would see these stops where people are getting all, you know,
yeah,
doing this kind of stuff, or like be cool
stuff in the bag,
furtive gestures, we would call it.
Yeah.
Or if you see somebody smoking a blunt, or you smell marijuana, that was before these legalization, or drinking in a car, it looks like alcohol, but you're not sure, that might be reasonable suspicion to stop a car and check it out.
Wow. Well,
so I've said nothing. I hope it makes sense.
Well, yeah. You know, and now I'm fuzzy on this, but wasn't there also a decision? Maybe it was a state Supreme Court decision, but I'm vaguely remembering something about a decision that just merely using the public road, a police officer can pull over a car just to check that you have a good operator's license and that you don't, your plate's not expired. He can run your plate. He can pull you over to run your plate, see if you have insurance, and see if you have a valid driver's license.
They cannot without, do that.
Okay.
That would be unkind. Now, look, okay. There's some interesting law on this. And if you want to go back.
I'm just curious if that was a decision.
Go back to Rudy Giuliani.
Okay.
And what he implemented was sort of a stop and ID.
On the sidewalk.
On the sidewalk.
People
sort
walking.
Of similar. So,
yeah.
And he was trying to clean up the streets in New York. You can't do that. You can't just pick a car at random, pull him over, and say, I'm going to check this guy's license after I pull him over. What you can do, though, is the police can run a guy's plate and see if it's expired and then pull him over.
Okay.
They can do that.
Okay.
But they can't just randomly pull people over. It begs the next question, or not begs, it brings up the next question. What about checkpoints? And we see these every weekend.
Oh, yeah, sure.
There's always sobriety checkpoints.
Yeah.
I think there was a case called Michigan versus Long, if I'm not mistaken. I might be wrong.
Yeah.
But it talks about sobriety checkpoints. And generally speaking, here's how that works. The police can set up a checkpoint, but they have to publish it and give in a publication of general dissemination.
Okay.
They have to tell people that it's out there.
Okay.
And they can't discriminate or exercise discretion in who they're stopping. What I mean by that is a lot of times you'll see, I've been through these checkpoints. I don't drink alcohol anymore, but I've been through one.
Yeah.
And
yeah, me too.
And
yeah.
I didn't get stopped.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, how's that? Here's why that's happening. Here's why that happened to
you. Every 10th car.
Sometimes they'll just do every third car, every 10th car.
Okay.
And they're not allowed to change. They have to follow that.
Okay.
That pattern.
So it's random.
It can't be random.
I meant like, in other words, your selection's random because you just happen to be the 10th car. That's all I mean.
Yeah. You didn't choose. The police didn't choose you because of the way you looked,
what
you were driving.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean they have to ignore obvious things. If you pull through a checkpoint and you're drinking alcohol,
well,
they're going to pull you over, not because it's a checkpoint, but because of other reasons.
Yeah.
They catch a lot of drunk drivers that way, or other people without licenses and things like
that. Yeah. At that highway I mentioned going through El Paso. So I went on one of my Western trips. I was driving through there and I was near one of the military bases that's right there in southern New Mexico. And yeah, I got pulled over. They just, you know, here I am driving a cube van, and they, you know, wanted to know what I was up to. It was like 2 a.m. You know, did I have a van full of people? Did I have drugs, whatever? You know, and I offered to open up the back of the van. And he said, no, it's not necessary. Just checking on, you know, vehicles.
Yep. So, look, it happens. It could happen to you. Okay. People ask me all the time, how do I square what I do upstairs representing people charged with crimes?
Yeah.
Am I not concerned? I look at it very simply. We have constitutional rights.
Yeah.
They have to be followed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't care if you're the number one cop in the world, I'm still going to hold you to that.
Absolutely.
And I don't care if you're right, if you violate somebody's constitutional Absolutely. Rights, because if we don't correct that,
yeah,
then it gets out of hand fast. And we have to redress that stuff somewhere. It has to be in the courts. And it has to be done correctly.
Let's do some winners and losers.
You bet. Well, I want to talk about the Big Bad Bunny, or maybe that is a winner and loser.
You want to do that as a loser?
all right, we'll do it in that context. So the Super Bowl is maybe the loser of the year. Look, who am I to say that it's the NFL's fault that the game sucked? But man, the game sucked. And what makes I've thought a lot about this. Like, what makes a boring football game? Everything that happened in that football game makes it boring. And I don't know if I just wasn't that interested. I don't know, whatever it was. But, man, it was a boring game to watch. And I was trying to focus on the game. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, it was a bad game.
And now the good news is, and my good I'll take from it, is that it was an opportunity to get the family together. You know, I had people over. We cooked. I had football food and made a pork shoulder. Had a great time. Watched the football. I mean, sort of acted like we were watching a football game.
Right.
And that was that. And then we had Bad Bunny and the Turning Point show. So we'll get to that. I think somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for me, the best thing was that Budweiser ad, yeah, where the horse and the chicken morphed into a bald eagle. I mean, it was great. Yeah. You know, to the tune of Lynyrd Skynyrd. You mm-hmm. know, to Freebird. I'm just like, you know, they've come a long way since Dylan, whatever his name was.
Dylan Mulvaney. Yeah. You know.
I think Budweiser learned its lesson.
The advertising, it's just generally flat, I thought. I thought, generally speaking, across the board. Remember, it used to be like...
funny. Right,
it used to be great. I mean, going back to the, like, what's up?
Yeah.
Or the Bud.
Right.
Right. But, I mean, we used to watch them and be glued to them. And this time I was trying to pay attention to the ads, and they just weren't all that great.
They weren't that great, no.
And then you had Bugs Bunny at halftime, so.
Yeah. Bad Bunny.
Bad Bunny.
So I mean, I watched Kid Rock and that whole thing, and I have to say the final tune that Kid Rock did at the end was just off the hook. It was really, really moving. And a little bit like Johnny Cash, you know, Kid Rock had a kind of a tumultuous drug and alcohol infused youth, and a lot of his songs are about partying and, you know, rock star stuff and all that kind of thing.
And even started with that, right? So
it
almost showed like his life transition, if that's what he was trying to do.
Kind of an evolution.
Yeah.
In his final song, he used his real name, Bobby. Is it Richie?
Bobby Richie. Yeah.
Yeah. Robert so Richie, yeah. But the song Steve referenced to open up with, he was Kid Rock, and he was kind of, I think, almost making. He was kind of amping up his Kid Rock persona and then resolving that by talking about his faith, a little bit like Johnny Cash, you know, Folsom City, you know, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. I mean, you know, a lot of Johnny's songs were pretty rough. And then, you know, towards the end, he became.
But he still sang the songs, right?
Yeah, he sang the songs, right? They were in his catalog, but he also had gospel albums and he was very faithful, and he wrote a book about St. Paul, who had a road to Damascus moment, and Johnny said he did too. And I think Kid basically
maybe
was
he
saying
did.
That.
And look, a little bit of a response to some of the because I swim in both ponds, right? I swim in the very conservative. I see the fundamental Christian response, and I've seen the other response, and both interestingly have sort of the same message here. It's all phony. you know, it's phony. It's just a show, and he's just saying this, or he's just doing this. Or the fundamental side would say, well, look, then why is he singing the first song? You should let that go. And I disagree with that. I mean, look, am I a Christian scholar? No, I'm not. But
right.
I mean, look, I think it shows we all are on this human path, hopefully advancing.
Right.
And if you don't know where you've come from, then you don't know where you're going.
Right.
And, you know, who are we to say that God can't use Kid Rock to get the message out?
Sure. Right.
And if that didn't happen in that last verse of the song, that he didn't write the song, but he penned that last verse, apparently.
Yeah.
And if that didn't happen in that last verse, then what else was it? You know, and so I always say, how many people, you might disagree with Kid Rock. You might disagree with the stuff he's done in his life. I do probably on some level. Not that I'm without my own history, but
yeah, we all struggle.
My response to both sides is, so what? If it's not genuine, well, then at least the message is out there.
Right.
And if it is genuine, then good for Kid Rock. He's found his Lord and Savior.
Right. I mean, there's been a number of those TV pastors, you know, even though I'm not a Southern Baptist, occasionally I'll catch that on TV. And, you know, whether it's Oral Roberts or Jimmy, whatever his name was, or whoever, They may have personal faults or whatever, but a lot of times the messages on those shows is profound.
Well,
and moving.
And who
even
are
if I criticize those people as people, you know,
Moses wasn't perfect.
None of the people.
Right. God doesn't use the perfect people.
No.
In fact, uses the flawed people, and maybe that's because we're all flawed. But anyway, the message is what counts.
Right.
And if nothing else now,
yeah.
And again, if Kid Rock or Bobby Ritchie has found Christ in a Savior, awesome.
Right.
Awesome.
My winner is Breezy Johnson. So Breezy Johnson is, a skier on the women's Olympic team in the Alpine and other events, I guess. She's also a competitor in, she won the gold. And in that same bracket was Lindsey Vonn, who, blew her ACL.
Horrible. Yeah, horrible.
Horrible. And then, like 8 days later, she's back out on the snow and breaks her leg, although the two injuries are said not to be related. But
You wonder.
Yeah. But the cool thing about Breezy's story is 4 years ago, she was training for the Beijing Winter Olympics on that very same course in Italy. She was training, and she lost a big chunk of cartilage out of her knee and could not go to the Beijing Olympics and compete 4 years ago. So here she is back in Italy on that same mountain, the mountain that just crushed Lindsey Vonn, right? And blew her out 4 years prior. And she had to overcome, think of the mind block and the static in her head that she had to overcome. And I just found it hugely brave of both of these ladies, Lindsey Vonn, who crashed out, as well as Breezy Johnson, who won the gold. And I couldn't be prouder of those two ladies as fellow Americans, and truly respect as a guy who races cars. I can really, as regular humans, I think, don't understand the drive to compete and the personal risk. I know I have personal friends with guys who have been killed racing cars. I know their families. I knew them. And you ask, well, why would somebody do that? You know, and I'm not sure I can put the words together to explain it, but I know what's in the heart and soul of these two champion skiers. And there's a purity to that. There's a very special inspirational thing that I get from people who are willing to put everything on the line.
Well, not just at the moment, but to get to that.
That's
moment.
Right.
It's, I mean, the commitment it takes to get to excellence in anything, let alone something like that.
Yes.
I mean, it is, and think of the seconds, and racing is this way too. Like the wins are it comes down to a slight mistake in a turn you make or whatever. Like, it can change everything. It's like the perfection that they strive for, and the training that they go through, and the commitment and self-sacrifice to get to that point and compete. It is remarkable. And I think that's really in everything that's athletics. That's what makes athletics so great. So anyway,
and that's what makes it should be non-political.
It should be non-political.
I mean, that's what, you know, we were talking about the Super Bowl. That's why so many Americans, and it's a shame there has to be a second halftime show, right? Because the Super Bowl should be something that brings us together as a country to relax.
And don't pick a side.
Yes,
don't pick a side.
For God's sake.
Don't pick a side.
Just pick a team to cheer for. But it,
don't pick a political side. Don't make a statement in the Super Bowl.
For those 3 or 4 hours.
I don't care if you agree or disagree. Don't do it. If it were a message that I agreed with, I would say don't do it.
Please, yes.
Just make it neutral. Make it entertaining. Make it fun.
Right.
Make it family friendly. You don't need to do it. Anyway, Troy, what you got? Good and bad?
Good.
He's over there. Good. He's over there. Good.
We just woke Troy up.
Yeah. Good. That guy that they did snag for the kidnapping, he came out and did a press conference afterwards, which I think is kind of entertaining. I love just like.
You mean the guy they
Mr. Detention?
Yeah, Mr. Detention. Now, I will say the thing that's kind of alarming. I mean, they did have a search warrant. So I would like to know. I don't know if that's just off a tip.
Yeah, his mother-in-law's house, I think it was, right?
They searched the guy's house. Yeah, they did.
They took his phones.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you need a warrant for that. You need to check some boxes. But he came out and did a press conference afterwards in front of the news just on his doorstep. So I think that's just entertaining when people do that.
Wow.
As a criminal defense lawyer, let me just offer some wisdom here. Don't do that.
So, yeah, Troy,
pop culture-wise, not a lawyer, do that. I need something.
If we put a head sock over you because you have a mustache, and very peculiar eyebrows. Would you perhaps AI tie you to?
I have an alibi. Don't worry. Don't worry. Bad. I actually had a personal story about we're talking about politics, Super Bowl. I had a friend that came down and watched it with me, and we were at a bar, and she was in the bathroom talking to one of my friends and explained that she writes policy for the Republican Party in Michigan. And, another girl in the stall came out, started screaming at her, calling her a murderer, ICE lover, all that.
Wow.
Really? At a Super Bowl bar party?
Yeah.
And wow.
And they come running out to us. And I mean, they're like, hey, we got to go. And
so let me get this straight. So your friend was explaining to another friend what she did, generally speaking, just small talk.
She was just asked what she did for work.
And she says, look, I'm a Republican up in Michigan. I write policy and I do blah, blah, blah. And somebody overhears that and interjects.
Yeah, wow.
That's the nonsense. You know what, though?
Wow.
I can't say it never happens, but you never hear that the opposite.
I know. And then she came out and the person who yelled at her came out also screaming, like the entire bar can hear it.
Wow.
And she was like, she looked at my friend, she's Asian, and she's like, you're brown. Like, how can you betray your own people? Which I thought was kind of crazy because that's insane to say at a bar. Also, she's not brown. She's Asian.
And look, is that the most interesting thing about her? Like, you just want to say, the most interesting thing about her is that she's Asian? It's like, why don't you get to freaking know her and not just judge her based on
what she
looks
like. Well, that's identity politics right there.
Yeah.
You know.
She was then brought up like all the ICE stuff in Minnesota.
Oh,
like,
for God.
I brought a gun here and I just like shot you guys in the neck already. Like, it was like the wildest thing I've ever seen.
Wow.
Probably the most racist thing I've seen in person, too. It's kind of a...
Yeah.
So that was my politics.
Well, that's pretty sick. That's
I do enjoy Bad Bunny, though. I will admit.
You're a Bad Bunny fan. Look, I don't know anything about Bad Bunny. I don't care anything about Bad Bunny. I don't like that the Super Bowl halftime show was all in Spanish, and it was more than that though, because he's got some history. Like, they were making a little bit of a statement. Look, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but it sure feels like it. And a lot, I'm not the only one that felt like it. And you know what, though? You know what is a good thing? Kid Rock actually made some comments about Bad Bunny, and they weren't negative.
No.
They were actually sort of positive. He didn't bash him. He didn't say anything.
Bashing was to the NFL.
To the NFL for sort of like what I'm saying. And I'm not saying because Kid Rock is saying it. I said it last week.
Right.
I just think, look, make it neutral, guys. That's all you got to do. It's
oh, yeah. Come on. You know, put Aerosmith or the Rolling Stones up there. Or Hank Williams Jr. Let's just have some good old-fashioned music.
Or pick a rapper. I don't care. I don't care, but don't make it political.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah. I guess the thing we're going to find out, apparently there are Spanish speaking folks that have said the language that was dropping F bombs. And
well, some guy was talking about reporting it to the FCC. And I was like, no.
We'll see what he said. I haven't seen a transcript and I didn't watch a show.
That's an interesting concept though. Like, can you report that?
Well, I forget who it was. I think it was a Republican congressman from Texas, maybe, or someplace. I can't remember, was saying that he's going to report it to the FCC. Don't do that. Just let it go. Let it go. Let it go.
Well, I don't know, man. They penalized the network for the, you know, Janet Jackson boob mistake. They money was paid for that
mistake. Yeah. No, I got you.
Yeah,
I got you.
I mean, if he was talking about genitalia and you know, whatever, we sodomy or whatever, I don't know what. Maybe he wasn't. Maybe he didn't talk of any dirty talk at all.
I guess I should say I will reserve judgment then to find out exactly what was.
Yeah, I mean, if it was truly against broadcasting rules, you know, about you know, pornography or whatever.
I guess my worry is it looks like you're targeting somebody. Fair enough. So anyway, all right.
We'll see. I don't know the facts. I admit that.
This has been your weekly dose of common sense right here from commonsenseohioshow.com. If you want to be a guest, you got a topic you want us to cover, you can go to commonsenseohioshow.com. Leave us a question right there or leave it in the comments in the socials, wherever you take in the show. We are happy to oblige, where we are coming at you right from the middle each and every week.